Just give me another beer.
Hello and welcome into the Feels Like 45 podcast. I'm Cade Webb, and as always, I am joined by Dustin Ragusa. Dustin, how are you doing on this Friday, sir?
Cade, is it safe to say we got him?
If it's not, this whole podcast is going to be immortalized as the greatest jinx in Oklahoma State history.
We jinxed ourselves last time.
I know.
With DeVries and Sprinkle. Sorry, didn't even ask you. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm great because I think we got him. I mean, how could you not be great after this, you know, 2 week long, you know, are they going to get Darian DeVries, Danny Sprinkle? Are they going to make a run at Bill Self? And finally, this ends probably where Oklahoma State wanted it all along with hiring Steve Lutz out of Western Kentucky. I think Oklahoma State made a run at several guys, but ultimately, I think we're just going to jump right into it because I'm super pumped to talk about it. I think they got their guy. I don't know if this was option one, but it was an option 10.
Yeah. And, you know, just to kind of recap what happened, Utah State, we last week on the pod, you and I broke down Darian DeVries and Danny Sprinkle. And we basically thought that those were the top two candidates because that's what everything we had seen, read, heard. We're not breaking news eyeball emoji guys. So we're just going off of what we've seen, heard,
a lot of those
getting
around
the feel of. Yeah. So we broke them down. I think at the end of it, you and I both thought it was probably a better chance of getting DeVries because of Sprinkle's ties to Washington. It ended up Utah State's Danny Sprinkle signed a 6-year, $22.1 million contract with Washington. Not a shocker there. His dad played football there. I think that's where you and I left off the pod, Cade. Correct me where I'm wrong.
It is.
If I'm wrong there. And then, which throughout this whole coaching search, there's been several guys you and I have liked. So where we've landed in Steve Lutz from Western Kentucky, I personally I love it. I know you like it. The only thing that made me mad during this coaching search, though, is that West Virginia ended up getting DeVries to the 5-year contract because that felt like it was a one-on-one battle with Oklahoma State and that we kind of lost it.
That's 100% what it felt like. And I think the sting is a little bit, I think it's still there because not only does West Virginia get Darian DeVries, they get Tucker in the next day. Like, so they are immediately bringing in one of the top, if not the top player in the transfer portal. So West Virginia already with a little bit of a leg up on Oklahoma State in this coaching search and in the transfer portal. So that was definitely a stinger, but I think Oklahoma State got a good one here. I think a little bit of a, is it an under the radar hire? Like, would you classify it as that? And I'm not saying that as like a Steve Lutz problem, but more so I think we were all looking at DeVries and Sprinkle and then just kind of stopped looking. Like, as a fan base, I would say. So that's why I think, could this have been an under the radar hire?
Yeah, it almost feels like that. It almost feels like there was a little bit of a, it's kind of a disappointment that you get Lutz, but then when you compare their blind resumes, are they really that different, Kate?
They're not. They're not really that different at all.
It's just, it's almost like if we wouldn't have had those two kind of circled and heard so much rumors about them, that this hire wouldn't feel as under the radar or as like maybe a quote unquote letdown as it does.
Well, and it's incredible when you look at it because the guy wins in March. You know, he took Texas A&M Corpus Christi to two NCAA tournaments. He took Western Kentucky to one in their first year. I mean, absolutely turned around A&M Corpus Christi. And so 3 years as a head coach, three NCAA tournaments, that is a great, great starting point. And I would totally agree with you. I think Adam Lunt pointed it out somewhere that there was a bit of a narrative formed around DeVries and Sprinkle that those were the guys that Oklahoma State wanted, and Oklahoma State didn't get them. And now you make at least to me, a comparable hire in Steve Lutz, but yet people are, you know, a little bit underwhelmed. I guess I get it, but at the same time, I think this is a great, great hire. Everything I've read about him, heard about him, is over the top positive.
Yeah, and just to kind of, before we kind of get into Lutz and break him down, his coaching record, some scheme stuff on him and who he might bring with him and things like that, we did get a few things confirmed from Polk's Report this week, which were kind of some rumors floating out there. So Polk's Report did confirm that Chad Weiberg interviewed Bryce Drew from Grand Canyon, Scott Drew's brother. And also we heard the Lutz interview earlier in the week before kind of the news came out about it. And then Robert Allen on the radio is saying that they have hired Lutz. So we're going off of that. We're going off some things we've heard internally that we feel pretty confident about. Again, we're not breaking news info guys, but with basketball stuff, we have a little bit more that we can kind of get info wise. We won't go into too much detail there, not to be the eyeball emojis guys, but we feel pretty confident about it. You know, guys like May from Florida Atlantic, he's gone to be Michigan's next coach. So Lutz was kind of the next guy down the list. Transfer portal wise, Cade, correct me if I'm wrong, but outside of the Nas Brown, Brandon Garrison, Javon Small, who hasn't really officially entered from everything we've heard, nobody's entered yet. So we may see some more guys enter now that once it's official, and yet they have until what, May 1st, March 18th to May 1st that the portal's open. So just kind of wanted to clear all of that up before we really get into Lutz.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And, you know, before we do that, we should remind you that this podcast is brought to you by our friends at the Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. Charlie Hustle is a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. Charlie Hustle wants you to be the best-dressed fan this season, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all season long. With over 30 schools to choose from, they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs, so shop today at www.charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. I think that's a great point that you just made before the break, Dustin. Outside of the guys that have already declared an intent to enter the portal, you gotta wonder if some of Steve Lutz's recruiting acumen, which he's been widely heralded for, he brought in Zach Edey, two-time Naismith Player of the Year, more than likely at Purdue. You have to wonder if him getting, you know, in the fold quickly could prevent several others from entering the portal if he wanted to. Because you look at Western Kentucky, doesn't seem like a roster that you would necessarily want to pull off multiple pieces from and bring it into Oklahoma State at this level. I think they've got a guy, Don McHenry, who would potentially be a candidate to play at this level. But outside of that, it gets a little bit thin. So getting him,
and he's more of a smaller guard, correct?
He is, yeah. And I actually think him and like a Javon Small could actually coexist in an offense like this. So yes, totally agree with that. But in my opinion, get him in as quickly as you can and let him work this out, and you'll likely see several enter the portal one way or another.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Cade, I think let's go through Lutz's kind of history. We'll talk about some scheme stuff, kind of like what we did with DeVries and Sprinkle, and then we can maybe guess, you know, at some contract numbers and kind of when this thing will get finalized. So he's 51 years old, about the same age as Sprinkle and DeVries. They were the 47, 49, 51. So he's 51 in that same range, a little older than Boynton, been around a little bit longer, kind of worked for a little bit more bigger names underneath them than Boynton did in his kind of coming up. So I think that's what Weiberg was looking for, because all three of those guys are very similar in that aspect. So he started at Incarnate Word as an assistant in San Antonio. That's where he's from originally, the San Antonio area. Went to East Central High School, played at Ranger Junior College for like, I think, 6 months, and then transferred to Texas Lutheran. He then coached at Garden City Community College in Kansas, Stephen F. Austin as an assistant, SMU as an assistant, Creighton as an assistant under McDermott. Then he was at Purdue as an assistant under Matt Painter. Then his first head coaching job with Texas A&M Corpus Christi, And finally, this last season, he was at Western Kentucky. Kate, it's very similar to the Sprinkle and DeVries kind of coaching resume. And he even coached with DeVries at Creighton.
Let me also give you some non-Oklahoma State coaching search examples of guys with a long pedigree of assistant coaching that have made the jump and won immediately. I don't have to say the guy in the Elite Eight that Oklahoma State once had. That's where everybody's mind goes. But I would also offer you Jerome Tang as a great example of, just because they've been an assistant doesn't mean that the jump is that hard on them, especially when you look at Lutz's coaching pedigree, who he's coached under. I think it's fascinating. And I think that it's a hire very likely to work out early. And I don't know if you read this, Dustin, but Bill Haston wrote an article about how similar this hire is to Brad Underwood, and I completely agree. I think the only difference is Brad Underwood was the name from the jump. It would have been like if Oklahoma State hired Darian DeVries and everybody's like, yes, we got our guy. But in reality, Steve Lutz is very, very similar to a hire they've already made before in Brad Underwood.
Yeah, it's a great point that you made too. And Cade, throughout his career, he set some big time accolades. So just kind of starting with Western Kentucky and moving backwards, I think they only returned 4 scholarship guys on that Western Kentucky team when he took it over, went 22-12, won this Conference USA tournament, and then went to the NCAA tournament and put up a good fight. They were a very, very fun team to watch. Number one in KenPom's adjusted tempo. They're one of the fastest teams in the country. So to put that in perspective, on the other end of the spectrum, Virginia is last in adjusted tempo. So that just kind of shows you the range of speed from there to there and how it's a completely different game he plays. Texas A&M Corpus Christi, in the last 2 seasons, he led them to consecutive NCAA tournament appearances, including the program's first ever NCAA tournament win in the first 4 victory over Southeast Missouri on March 14th last year. With Lutz at the helm, the Islanders won 3 conference championships, 2 tournament and 1 regular season over those 2 seasons. And he held a career coaching record of 47-23, was named the 2023 Southland Conference and NABC District 22 Coach of the Year. So in his head coaching career, he's gone to the tournament all 3 seasons, and he's really done some pretty amazing turnarounds. That first season at Corpus Christi, they had 4 consecutive losing seasons before he took over. They finished 5-19 the year before he got there, and then they went 23-12, which was the largest turnaround in program history. And I think it was one of, if not the largest turnarounds in the NCAA that season. He also brought in, I think, 10 transfers into the program, and they had 12 total transfers on the roster. So he did it with just a completely new team.
Yeah. And I think that was part of the allure of Danny Sprinkle, was that his turnaround at Utah State looked very similar. For me, that almost is a must to be able to demonstrate your ability to rebuild a roster from scratch and win immediately. That was why I kind of gave, you know, my endorsement to Sprinkle rather than DeVries, was because of his ability to build that up. Granted, he inherited a great kind of situation. I don't think Steve Lutz inherited a great situation at either of Texas A&M Corpus Christi or Western Kentucky. When you look at what he was walking into, I think his ability to turn a program around quickly is actually possibly more impressive than the guy that I was impressed by originally.
Yeah, Cade. And then when you look at his, we don't have to go through all the accolades of Purdue and Creighton because people know those programs, and we talked about it a lot when we talked about DeVries last week. But out of those 3 guys, and I think this pod's going to be kind of a comparison between these 3 guys the entire time, just because of how dedicated to those 2 the last week's pod was. Is it wrong to say that maybe he has the most overall kind of big time Power 5 NCAA tournament experience because of working at both Creighton and Purdue, as opposed to a DeVries who was just at Creighton?
I don't think it's a stretch at all. I think that it definitely gives him a leg up on Danny Sprinkle. I said this on a podcast that one of my concerns was his lack of experience prior it wasn't very colored. Like he had, you know, some stints at Montana State. Utah State was an assistant at Montana State for a long time. So it was like, okay, you know, there's not a ton of meat on the bone there. DeVries, his pedigree under Greg McDermott as well was very attractive. But I said this additionally on last week's podcast, the Purdue Creighton, you know, mold when Creighton came to Gallagher Iba and just absolutely mopped the floor with Oklahoma State and they did it with their system. It was like, oh, that's what Oklahoma State basketball should look like. Right. And then to have two candidates in this search that are from that coaching tree is very impressive. But I do agree with you. I think they got the guy that might be better, you know, ultimately because of that experience.
Yeah. And kind of going along with that, you know, and we talked about it, you know, we don't have to go through all the accolades, but he's been to the Elite Eight at Purdue, Sweet 16. Creighton was in the tournament. We talked about his tournament runs with Western Kentucky and Texas A&M Corpus Christi. At SMU, he was the recruiting coordinator there. And his first two recruiting classes were ranked in the top 35 nationally by Hoop Scoop Online. And he was also the recruiting coordinator at Stephen F. Austin. So not only does he have recruiting coordinator experience in his career, but he has it in the state of Texas, where Oklahoma State recruits a lot of their players currently.
Yeah, I mean, I think that once you dig a little bit deeper than Western Kentucky was in the NCAA tournament, the reasons are pretty plentiful why Oklahoma State would be attracted to somebody like this. And that is a big one. His recruiting ties are deep and they are solid.
Okay, Cade, so I wanted to throw out some random notes. You and I talked about these off pod, and I will put these podcast links up that I listen to. So I found four interviews. Three of them were one-on-one. One of them was two guys interviewing Lutz when he was at Purdue. So one was from his time at Purdue. Two were from Texas A&M Corpus Christi, and one was recent from his time at Western Kentucky. In all four of these interviews, he just kind of takes you through his coaching career, his background, and even in, I think there's two of them where he kind of goes pretty deep into offensive and defensive scheme. And he is very good at explaining basketball X's and O's. One thing, not to take a shot at Boynton, but one thing I think Mike Boynton kind of struggled with, or maybe just didn't want to do in interviews, was explain X's and O's and explain X's and O's like you would to non-basketball people. And I think Lutz does a very, very good job of that. So just kind of wanted to go through some of these just kind of random notes. One thing that's interesting, Cade, which I know you know, his family stayed in Corpus Christi because his daughter was a senior in high school. So he went solo to Western Kentucky. So he's going to be getting back a lot closer to his home in San Antonio, a lot closer to Corpus Christi. And his other daughter, actually, I think is graduating from Purdue. So he won't really have any ties to kind of that Northern Midwestern area anymore, I don't think. And that might have played a role into this decision.
Gotta wonder if it did. I didn't realize that he, until I kind of started digging yesterday, I didn't realize he spent an entire year away from his family. He was really candid in an interview about that, like how hard that was. He said there were a lot of lonely days. I think it's really impressive that he was able to go out there and win the way he did, knowing now what his situation was personally. That would suck.
Yeah. He was cracking me up too, kind of just talking about more of his background. He said, you know, coming out of high school, he was an all district guy, best player on his team. And, you know, he thought for sure he was going to be an NBA guy. And so he took a shot going the junior college route first. Said it was one of the I don't think he was taking a shot at Ranger Junior College. I think he meant like the basketball program wasn't very good, but he said it was one of the worst in the Kansas, Texas junior college area in terms of skill and just how they were performing as a program. He stayed there for a little bit and was like, this isn't for me. Went to Texas Lutheran, ended up, you know, team captain. I think he started every year, was a solid player, but it was just funny how he was like, you know, I learned pretty quickly that I wasn't that guy. I wasn't that guy. So
not that guy.
He also said initially he was going for a business degree and had no intention to coach. And he took, I think he said, the entry-level accounting class and barely was able to pass, and talked to, you know, the school, the counselor there and everything. She was like, maybe you should take a different degree then if you're not if you're struggling with the entry level class. So we got a teaching degree, got into coaching and everything like that. But a lot of interesting connections. He talked about on one interview that he met Buzz Williams early in his coaching career, and they are such good friends that they were actually in each other's weddings.
Yeah, that's
so
wild.
Buzz Williams is a good friend. Also, I can't ask a follow-up question because this is an old podcast, and I tried to look up the ties, so maybe one of our listeners knows, but whenever McDermott was looking for assistance at Creighton, he reached out to Pat Knight, who was the Texas Tech coach at the time, and Lutz was actually at dinner with Knight because something for the Big 12 was going on in Dallas, and Lutz was at SMU at the time. And Pat Knight was like, I've got a guy literally that I'm at dinner with right now who I think would be a perfect fit for your staff. McDermott also called Barry Hinson, who is the NIL director, kind of recruiting coordinator for Oklahoma State basketball and for Oklahoma State athletics right now, former college basketball coach. We've talked about Barry a lot on this podcast. And Barry gave Lutz a recommendation. So they somehow have a connection, which is very interesting. I know, Cade, we were having some trouble figuring out what that was. And then another big name coach he's connected to do really well, Budenholzer, former Bucks and Atlanta Hawks head coach, won a title with the Bucks. When Lutz was at Incarnate Word, the Spurs would practice there. And Budenholzer was a video assistant, video coordinator with the Spurs. A job opened up and he tried to get Lutz to join him with the Spurs, but it would actually have been a pay cut. Lutz said no, and then the Spurs win the title like either the next year or 2 years later, and everybody on the staff got these huge bonuses, and he said it's kind of a big regret for him that he wasn't able to cash in on that bonus.
Oh, I'm sure when you are, you know, spending most of your career as an assistant on the bench, that's not big money. I mean, we know that pretty well. That's not a glamorous lifestyle that you live. So those are fascinating connections. The Barry Hinson one is, when you talk about hiring an Oklahoma State guy, quote unquote, like Steve Lutz is not that. But Barry Hinson also is not that until he comes on campus, and now he is. You have to wonder if that connection gave Chad Weiberg a lot of confidence in who he was going after because of Weiberg's proximity to Barry Hinson. That's a great thought.
Yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to bring it up. And, you know, the other thing, the last kind of just general note on him, and I know there are other coaches like this, but, you know, he doesn't have a playing in Europe background, playing an NBA background, big connections with, you know, any family members playing like that or anything like that. He said his mom was a stay-at-home mom because he was one of six. His dad worked as a, telephone line repair guy for, like, I think he said like 40 years. He told actually a really cool story about it in one of the podcasts that I'll put out on our Twitter. But when he was a grad assistant at Incarnate Word, he said when he wasn't coaching, he was working in restaurants and bars just to make ends meet. So this is a guy who really grinded it out from the bottom. And it just kind of, the only reason I wanted to call it out is because, you know, he cares about coaching basketball because he literally had to start at the lowest point. He wasn't a grad assistant at Duke or anything like that. So I just wanted to bring that up before we kind of get into some stats and scheme stuff.
I'm glad you did. I'll give you another kind of comparison of a guy who spent a lot of time in the assistant coaching ranks and made the jump to the Power 5 level and won. TJ Otzelberger, Iowa State's head coach. I mean, he spent basically 20 years on the assistant coaching bench, 15 years, but makes the jump from South Dakota State to UNLV to Iowa State, and now he's one of the top coaches in the league, just won the Big 12 tournament. So there are comparisons all over the place in this conference for why Oklahoma State makes a jump like this.
Yeah, it's a great, I love these comparisons that you're making because I think they're really connecting all of this together. And also, just to throw this in again, as we go through this podcast, hopefully they do hire him because we're going way deep right now.
But yeah, that would be good.
Looking at some stats stuff, we talked about one in adjusted tempo for Western Kentucky, fourth in average possession length. So they played really fast. On defensive side, they weren't, you know, Cade, correct me if I'm wrong, they weren't eye-popping anywhere on defense, even looking at the advanced metrics, but they weren't bad. You know, 87th and three-point defense. his three head coaching years, his teams have been in that like 60, 70, 80 range in 3-point defense, which is respectable for a smaller school. So I do love to look at that 3-point defense stat, because if teams aren't shooting good from three against you, you're probably doing something right. Anything else from that Western Kentucky team you really wanted to call out that we haven't hit already?
Their turnovers were a little bit higher than you would probably like if you're an Oklahoma State fan that watched this team this year. Oklahoma State and Western Kentucky were almost like neck and neck in terms of turnovers per possession. So that's the one that I noticed, and I think most will notice.
Yeah, and they weren't a big – not causing like a ton of turnovers either. Like their turnover percentage was decent, but it wasn't like amazing. So obviously when you look at those two stats together, not the best. But when you look back at his Texas A&M teams, again, they weren't as fast in adjusted tempo. The 2022-23 team was 59th in possession length. But this team has some eye-popping stats just in general. So that team led the conference in scoring, free throw percentage, three-point defense, what we were just talking about, rebounding margin, assist to turnover ratio, and they were second in scoring defense, field goal percentage defense, and steals. So it, you know, there's only 3 years to go off of. And when you look at that Western Kentucky year and say, man, this was maybe wasn't the best defensive team, maybe wasn't the best team at like taking care of the basketball, but that Texas A&M team in 22-23 was, and they were second in free throw percentage.
One
in the
thing,
country.
Yeah, totally. I'm going to go a little bit on the roster construction. One thing that I noticed as I was digging into Western Kentucky, he had two Power 5 transfers on his starting lineup. He had Christian Lander from Indiana, which was a 5-star, if I'm not mistaken, coming out of high school. And then Brandon Newman, who played at Purdue and somewhere else. But regardless, he had some talent on that roster. And then Don McHenry was a JUCO kind of all-star and transfers and does a great job. So it's not like he was working with a, you know, a bare cupboard. He was able to pull in some talent in 1 year and win.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome to look at. And, you know, we talked about his recruiting at SMU and Stephen F. Austin. In the Purdue interview that I listened to, he had just gotten back from traveling all over Europe and watching under-18 games. And he was going through, you know, how you recruit over there, because these guys, a lot of these U18 coaches are club coaches and they want these players to stay over there and come play for their club team when they're old enough. And then you don't even know if these guys are even interested in coming over to the U.S. So he has experience recruiting internationally from the JUCO level, which you just called out, and from high schools in Texas. So pretty diverse recruiting background that he has. It's very interesting when you look at all of it.
Yeah, it really is. It kind of gets me excited. Like, what does Oklahoma State do? You know, there's rumors of big NIL money about to be injected into the program. So it gets me pretty pumped.
Yeah. And then looking at his first year with A&M Corpus Christi, they were 29th in average possession length. So that came back to being a little bit faster, like this Western Kentucky team. 19th in offensive rebound percentage, 18th in defensive turnover percentage, 40th in steal percentage. So he has had some good defensive teams. Before we go into a little bit more scheme stuff, Cade, the one negative I looked at from stats, we talked about defense stuff, we talked about turnovers. The best team he's ever beaten as a head coach is the 94th ranked La Tech team in the KenPom rankings. It's going to be a pretty rude awakening when he gets into the Big 12 and every team is ranked higher than 94th.
Every single almost. One. And it will actually be a better conference next year because you're going to pull in Arizona. I mean, it is going to be a rude awakening in that regard, but I will be interested to see what level of talent he can pull in and can you win in 1 year. I don't love that fact that you just laid out there, because when you're in the Conference USA and you're Western Kentucky, you get some opportunities to win some bye games, and you probably didn't. But I mean, the talent gap, we saw that Texas A&M Corpus Christi team actually come into Stillwater. The talent gap was pretty significant. So I don't hold that against him too much.
Yeah. And like looking at Western Kentucky's schedule, until Marquette, outside of that La Tech team that they won and lost to, they didn't even play anybody else in the top 100. So like you said, it's not even like he had a chance.
Right.
And kind of the same thing when you look at Texas A&M Corpus Christi, they didn't play anybody until they played Alabama that year, 2 years ago. So they did play Arizona, sorry, and they lost to them and Mississippi State. But it's not like he had a ton of chances. What is that, four in 2 years to even win? And two of them were Marquette and Alabama. So
right. Yeah. The Marquette, I mean, if I was looking at an example of what – you know, Steve Lutz's team would look like, I would go to the last game they just played and watch them against a Power Five opponent in Marquette. And I mean, they had the lead at halftime. They looked really solid. So I'm excited. I am excited for a fast brand of basketball to come back to Stillwater, because Oklahoma State pulled their foot off the gas this year, and it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and it's a perfect segue, Caden, to a little bit of scheme stuff. You know, it sounds like throughout his career, he's kind of always run motion. But when he got to Purdue, I think he kind of adapted Matt Painter's style and then added in how fast he likes to play. So, you know, that Matt Painter runs that kind of open post five-man motion where they allow different people to post up, but he also runs the 41, four out, one in, where they keep the big inside specifically. I think you know who I'm talking about if you watch Purdue and Zach Edey. If your big won't run or move, anchor and play through them. That's kind of what they did with Edey at Purdue. And you know, Lutz had a big role, apparently, in getting Edey to Purdue, which is pretty cool. He said that he wants to score in the first 12 seconds of the shot clock. But as you've seen from that Texas A&M Corpus Christi team 2 years ago, he did say he will change that based on personnel. And you saw they were 59th in possession length. So I don't think that was always scoring in the first 12 seconds of the shot clock. And he said he kind of runs that in transition. It's that Carolina break that Roy Williams made popular, that four out transition, where he knows that the other team is probably getting back one or two guys always in transition quickly. And one of them is probably a guard. So he likes one of his bigs to get back with one of his guards and try to get a mismatch and try to get into the post. And if, you know, the point guard's driving it into the elbow, into the paint, if he's not able to get it to the big, come back out to the wing, set up the motion, and then it's read and react off there. He says, you know, out of timeouts, out of bounds plays, he's calling sets, but his offense is read and react. And he wants his players to be able to know how the progressions go. It's almost like option routes in football, maybe you would think of, or zone running scheme for a running back. When you see the hole open up, you've got to go that way. Maybe that's not the flow of the line, but you're going to have to cut it back and go a different way. So he uses simple terminology. They use a lot of color terminology. I watched one of his coaching clinics that I found from 2012 when he was at Creighton. So it's a lot of that kind of stuff in his offense. He says the one thing, Kate, he admitted it. It takes a little while for his teams to learn, and he goes slowly through the progression. So he said, and I think it was at Texas A&M Corpus Christi in September during practice, they didn't set any ball screens. They didn't work on that at all because he doesn't want to throw too much stuff at these guys. The problem is that first season there, he said he doesn't think his guys really got the offense until December, which is several months into the season.
Yeah. It's also probably one thing that if you look at Lutz, even on a surface level, you'll notice this. His teams get better late in the year. Mike Boynton's teams always did that as well. I will say the free-flowing nature of what Western Kentucky did on offense is probably what directly causes the maybe undesirable amount of turnovers. If you're not running like literally like know exactly where you're going, makes it a little bit harder. So it may give you some pros, like, you know, these guys can get into some spaces that otherwise they would be told not to, but you may turn the ball over due to miscommunication. So it will be interesting to watch. It kind of sounds like, when you break it down that way, a little bit of what Oklahoma State has seen in Stillwater for the last several years.
Yeah, and he also loves the zoom action, which is that dribble handoff on the strong side where there's a guy kind of coming up from the pin down screen, and then there's a second dribble handoff kind of thing. So he does love that. He mentioned zoom action in several of those interviews. But yeah, it's point guard heavy. So if they're able to keep Javon small, I think he would flourish in this. And they like to go to the bigs. So Brandon Garrison, I think, would dominate in this offense as well. So, you know, he said there's probably 6 to 8 things they like to do in transition. And if they can't, then it flows into their read and react offense. So they call out every cut. So the defense is hearing every cut they say. So that's why they use this terminology to kind of bounce things. So the defense can't really catch on, you know, they'll say reverse or blue. And that, you know, that means kind of different things. And then on defense, he said his defense is simple. It's aggressive up the line and his team is going to fight harder than your team.
Wow. And that,
like literally the guy kept kind of prodding at him with X's and O's questions. And he was like, no, that's it. And he's like, I install the defense first. It's aggressive man to man. We'll do some pressure stuff. We'll trap, especially out of timeouts and out of bounds plays. And we work on a lot of different ball screen defense, pick and roll defense. They've got like, I think he said like 8 different ways that they guard the pick and roll and the ball screen. So it seems like it's pretty simple to learn on defense. He doesn't like to throw too much at his guys, especially when he's got this kind of more progressive learning, read and react offense. I think he tries to keep the defense simple.
Which I love. And when I started talking about what I want to see in the next Oklahoma State head coach, it did start on the defensive end for me. It was aggression there because I felt like Oklahoma State lost a lot of that just by trying to overcompensate on offense. And I wanted Oklahoma State to get back to that point. So I love hearing that.
Yeah, a couple of early loud and often. He said that a lot in his coaching clinic. So he loves guys to be loud on offense and defense. Says he likes short, action-packed practices, especially during the season, and loves to switch off his drills. They go offense, they go defense. So he keeps the guys interested. It seems fun from what, like, that coaching clinic was basically a practice he was running at Wayne State College. And he didn't coach there, but he had come there and kind of ran one of the practices and had some high school coaches there. And it was pretty fun and interesting to watch. But Cade, before we wrap up Lutz, unless you had anything else, I did want to mention assistant coaches that he might bring over. I was looking at the Western Kentucky roster, looking back at the Corpus Christi. He didn't bring anybody from Corpus Christi with him to Western Kentucky, but he does have some guys with him at Western Kentucky that I think he might bring over to Oklahoma State, starting with Tim McAllister, who was with him at Creighton for 2 years. McAllister was at Texas Tech as the chief of staff for several years. This is a guy that's kind of been around the Texas high school recruiting scene. He's a younger guy. Does that name interest you at all? Do you think that would be helpful bringing some guys with some Texas ties?
I think that if you're at Oklahoma State and you don't have Texas ties, you're going to struggle. I mean, it could be a reason Oklahoma State didn't. I don't know. I would say that's a great, great potential hire to make simply for recruiting purposes.
Yeah. The other one is Robert Guster, who was at Texas State and then at 10 seasons at UTSA. So another guy with big time Texas ties, and he's a little bit older. So you'd have McAllister, who's kind of the younger guy, and then Guster coming over. And man, Cade, another interesting thing in these interviews that I listened to with Lutz, he calls out listening to his assistants and taking their advice and like talking kind of self-deprecating himself, especially like he mentioned an example about late game execution. They struggled with that his first season at Corpus Christi, and his assistants were like, we got to work on this more. We got to work on this more. And he was like, you guys are right. We need to work on this more. That's my bad. I messed up. We'll work on this more going into the next season. And it's, you know, I know it's kind of a rumor, but it's a knock we've heard on Boynton. And he seems to defer to his assistants a lot. And I think it's because he was given so much kind of power, I guess, responsibility in his assistant jobs. You know, he was basically, he referred to himself as the defensive coordinator for Matt Painter's teams at Purdue.
Yeah, which is super exciting because if you watch Purdue basketball, they start on the defensive end. Dustin, who do you think he would keep from the existing assistant coaches at Oklahoma State, if any?
From everything I've heard, recruiting-wise, high school family-wise, ties-wise in the Oklahoma area, Keaton Page seems to be a guy that parents, kids, current players like a lot. I don't know about his X's and O's coaching ability. I don't know that much about, you know, he hasn't been anywhere else. I kind of like when the guys leave Oklahoma State and come back, but I think Keaton Page would be a guy that he keeps around. What about you?
Well, I'll say about Keaton Page leaving and coming back, that could put him in position one of these days to take this job. You know what I mean? That I would also point to a guy at North Texas that very similar to Keaton Page, Phil Forte. I mean, he's been there for 5 years and they've improved every year in their 3-point shooting ability. You think he would want to take a run back at Oklahoma State under a Brad Underwood like, you know, hire?
See, I would love that. And I'm not trying to take a shot at Keaton at all. I think, you know, Keaton was a great player. He was there, you know, around the time when I was in school. I just like when the guys get a little bit of experience outside of their comfort zone, which is kind of, you know, Lutz talked about finally leaving Texas after SMU and getting a little bit of experience way away from his comfort right. zone in Creighton. So I would love that. And I would also love for Phil Forte to come back. I think that would be great, especially for a team that struggled in 3-point shooting.
Well, as you said, let's just pray that this 35 minutes on Steve Lutz was worth it and that they get the deal officially done. No real speculation on my end as to why it hasn't gotten done, but there are some rumors that April 1st could be the day. I think everything's a rumor at this point. So hope you hear something sooner rather than later.
Before we wrap it up, Kate, I wanted to ask you, what do you think the contract will be, like amount of years and maybe like around what the per year figure is? You don't have to include bonuses or anything, but just like a guesstimate.
Based on what I saw Darian DeVries and Danny Sprinkle go for, I bet it's a 4 year, $2.75 million. I think the fifth year could be like, if you make the NCAA tournament, you automatically get that fifth year. Like that year could be incentivized.
Yeah.
But I bet it's 4 years.
Yeah. I think I agree with you. I was going to go somewhere in that 2.5, 2.7 range. So, and I do think it'll be under 5 years to start. I think there's a little bit of, you know, hesitancy to throw a big contract
Can
after
you blame
the Ford and Boynton
at all for that? I mean, the last two big contracts they've written for Oklahoma State basketball have not worked out well. So I don't blame him at all.
I honestly think the coaching candidates, and I'm not saying they should not, like, I mean, if they get a longer offer somewhere else for more money, they should definitely take, like, you know, you could take that. I wouldn't be mad at you for that. But I think that these coaching candidates should even understand that a little bit. Like, these guys
for
have
sure.
been burned twice recently.
Yeah. Yeah. Just look, it's not hard to notice.
Yeah, so, Cade, I think we'll move to to football. We probably won't have time to cover other sports stuff. Cade and I have some stuff we have to take care of work-wise outside of the pod. So we'll do some football notes, and then we'll probably sign off for the day. So should we take a quick break here,
yeah,
Cade, for the pod?
Let's hear from Classic Overland, and we'll come right back. We want to say a quick thank you to sponsor the Feels Like 45 podcast, Classic Overland. Classic Overland specializes in restoring original Land Rover Defenders designed with your unique style and specifications. They go to great lengths to find quality vintage Defenders before they begin the restoration process, and their team of experts will guide you through the various exterior and interior options to create the perfect build. Our friends Luke Reed and Robert Dennis of Classic Overland are both Oklahoma State graduates and will work with you through the process to ensure you have a great experience. And in addition, if you purchase a Classic Overland Defender and mention this podcast, the Feels Like 45 podcast, their team will donate a portion of the proceeds to the Pokes with a Purpose NIL Collective. To learn more, you can visit their website, classicoverland.com. And you can contact Luke and Robert at robert@classicoverland.com. Thank you, and go Pokes. All right, Dustin, welcome back. Big week for Oklahoma State basketball, and also a big week for Oklahoma State football as spring football gets kicked off. And as many know, this is one of our favorite times of the year where you get the first glimpse of the new roster, some of the position changes, the new recruits, all of it's very exciting. Dustin, I know you're fired up.
Yeah. So the first week of practice, like you said, they'll be in helmets, jerseys, and shorts, no contact. One interesting note, Robert Allen wrote on Pokes Report, this is kind of not related to spring practice, but more related to NIL. that Colin Oliver confirmed that at one point early this spring, he learned that the walk-ons might not be getting their NIL paid for a period of time, and that he told Pokes with a Purpose to take his money and pay the walk-on teammates.
Oh, wow.
That's which is, awesome. Yeah, pretty cool. I know some people are like, why are walk-ons getting paid? With NIL, I think anybody on any football team in D1 is getting a little bit of money. We kind of went over this when all of this started, but that's pretty cool from Colin Oliver. I'm sure he's making quite a bit and has now for a couple of years. So I think he maybe had a little bit of extra and just want to throw it out to his boys that help him out at practice, help him out on the scout team. And have to
I would like to
him.
Also say that if there are any Oklahoma State football players that love the Feels Like 45 podcast and are rolling in their NIL money, we are accepting sponsorships. So,
yeah, and practices seem to have been going pretty, you know, it's going to be last year we had a ton of depth chart discussion, Cade, right? This year, we kind of know the depth chart. At least everywhere outside of maybe some of the spots on defense that we think guys might rotate around. But on offense, outside of maybe one or two here or there on the offensive line, I think we kind of know the ones. It's more interesting to talk about the twos.
I think it is too. I mean, and any of the potential, you know, movements, that's where I'm most interested in.
Yeah. So out behind Bowman, it's going Rangel, Flores, and then we have confirmed from the pronunciation guide, it is Maya Liuake. Oh, wait, sorry. Maya Liuaki. Maya Liuaki.
Maya Liuaki.
Maya Liuaki. So there we go. We can clip that. And y'all can make fun of us for that. But I think we were saying Waki. So I think it's a little bit different pronunciation there on how it's Maya Liuaki.
Miley Uaki. Got it.
Okay. Perfect. We've got it. We're going to say it correctly.
And we've got a hard stop and we got to get out of here.
Ceci Vaihi is running as the two running back with AJ Green behind him. Some of the freshmen early enrollee safeties like Landon Cleveland, Willie Nelson, David Kabongo have been standing out at practice. Apparently, Paul Randolph is very loud, very vocal, very in your face, very hands-on, and I think the players are really liking that. Tyler Foster, he's taking all the first team reps right now. So as expected, apparently he looks as good as we thought he did from his time at Ohio. And then a very interesting note, Kate, I wanted to hit it now before we hit the player interviews, which is where it was said, because Robert Allen also said it on the radio. Isaiah Glass is running with the ones, confirmed by Robert Allen and by starting center Joe Mahalski. And Robert Allen actually said that he believes it's mainly been at right tackle, and he thinks there could be a chance that Jake Springfield gets some reps at guard.
Whoa.
Yes.
Well, that would be very interesting.
So you're talking about I guess I would think from left to right, Dalton Cooper, Jason Brooks. I'll throw Cole Birmingham with the twos because he was rotating in, but Brooks was normally starting when he wasn't hurt. Joe Mahalski at center. Preston Wilson, and then Isaiah Glass on the right side.
Salty offensive line right there, I think.
You're talking about a guy who's, I know Arizona State wasn't very good, but you're talking about a guy who started at left tackle for a Power 5 team, coming in and beating out your multiple-year starter at right tackle in Jake Springfield, who we know is a technician on the offensive line. Maybe not always the strongest guy, but a very technically sound offensive lineman. That would give you guys like Cole Birmingham, Jake Springfield, and Taylor Materko as your twos, not to mention up-and-comers like Noah McKinney, Austin Kowecki, Davis Dotson, Jack and Dean, Jacoby Sanders, Gage Stanilan, Calvin Harvey. Is this offensive line unit becoming somewhat of a strength of the team?
It's actually a little bit stacked, and I was just sitting here thinking like, over the last several years, they threw so many scholarships at the offensive line to where it was like, it's going to have to work because you're going to recruit so many guys out of the portal and from the high school level that it can't not work the amount of scholarships they threw there. So it's really awesome to see that they could be like 10 deep, legitimately 10 deep.
Yeah, it's so cool. Last couple of notes, Kenneth Harris, the defensive back transfer, cornerback transfer from Arkansas State, who redshirted last year, has been making some plays. And then, Cade, behind Stribling, Presley, and Owens, I know there's some question marks. We've got Daywon Lofton, who's going to be coming in the summer. He's not there yet. You've got the young guys like Pope, Andrews, and Hurd. Shetron, who we all know. But, man, you know who? I just think behind the ones, I think Cale Kabanis will be getting some run. And I know some people might be like, oh, that guy's been here forever. He's not really done a ton. He's got the Boise State catch. But this is a guy who's played every position, just like a Rashad Owens at receiver, and has shown he has good hands, decent route running ability, fairly athletic. And I think the coaches respect and trust him. And I think Bowman trusts him. And I think if you were to see somebody go down with injury, Kabanis might be a guy that steps up along with Shetron.
Yeah, I think I would agree. It's actually something we talked about with Lund, is like the top line quality of the wide receiver room is borderline elite, but it's not all that deep, especially out at the perimeter positions. So any injury, I bet you would see him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be pretty interesting to see how the backup receiver room shakes out, especially when Lofton gets there, because you and I are both really high on him.
Yep.
Outside of the general notes, Gundy met with the media. He talked about, you know, how last spring they had around 28 new players. This spring, it's only like 12-ish. So it's a little bit different, you know, seventh-year guys, sixth-year guys, fifth-year guys. So it's considerably different from an overall installation standpoint. And he said basically it's like a complete change from how they went into last season.
Which is awesome. I like it. Will be interesting to keep an eye on, though.
He's in a very good mood also. And you know how Gundy's moods normally go with how the team is going. Because he was in a good mood last year. And then they started off slow, but then they end up in the Big 12 championship game. So it's like he always just knows. And why would he not, you know, 20 years into this thing? But
he seems more happy than normal. He does have a bad poker face about his teams. And a lot of times you see coaches like that know they have a good team kind of do the opposite. Like they are especially like more hard-ass. It's exactly what I was going to say. So
it's like, we suck. They win it all.
Gundy's like, we are the talk of the town. And he lets everybody kind of know it with his body language and his hair. And yeah,
I kind of love it.
Yeah, I mean, I do too, because you get a good indication of this team's probably going to be pretty good.
He made a very funny comment. They were talking about Alan Bowman kind of transforming his body. And, you know, we talked about on the roster, it shows Bowman is weighing more. Bowman and now Gundy have both said that he's probably lost about 6 to 8 pounds and kind of leaned up and like looking a little bit more muscular and athletic. He also said Bowman came in a little soft from Michigan. So I thought that was funny, just taking a shot at him when he's probably like 20 feet away from Gundy.
I mean, some of these Big Ten quarterbacks, though. I mean, what's the dude at Iowa? What's his name?
I
can't remember his
Stone
name.
Stone is always running his mouth, but yeah.
Exactly.
I thought that was kind of funny, but it's cool. I mean, you can see, like, you've seen these pictures of Bowman from this week of practice. He looks slimmer and, like, in a little bit better shape overall. Like, he's flexing in one of the pictures, which I don't know if I've ever seen him flex in a picture before. So he's obviously feeling himself a little bit. Gundy was asked about the newcomers, and the first name he shouted out was Stillwater tight end Josh Ford.
Oh, wow.
So I think, you know,
that's
could that be the two tight end behind your Tyler Foster? I know we've got Quentin Stewart. I know Tabby Shetron's on the roster, but man, if Gundy's calling a guy out by name and not by number or not by location, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, good point. Very good point. We kind of talked about this, though. Like, their next tight end was totally unsolved. It wouldn't shock me to see that.
Yeah, and just, you know, a couple more notes, just random ones. He said that Randolph's name came up throughout his defensive line coach search from everybody he talked to. So, and then he had a lot of nice things to say about Greg Richmond. And he just said they needed to go in a different direction, needed some new blood in there. He wanted to some different things, a coach that maybe had some knowledge in some different areas. But he shouted out Greg Richmond and just had a bunch of nice things to say about him.
Yeah, which you would expect. Richmond was with the program for so long. But I think there's a reason they made this change. And you talking about Randolph's body language and he's boisterous is like, that could have been part of it. You never know.
Yeah.
Gundy said several reasons is why they made that move.
Last interesting note, he said they're not going to put a lot of pressure on Stribling's hand this spring. So I would expect Dejan Stribling maybe not to be a full go. I think we did say he was a full. I think I did say on a previous podcast he was a full go. Might have been incorrect there. It sounds like maybe he's going to be kind of 50-50 like some of these offensive linemen are.
Wow, that must have been a pretty significant hand injury for it to be. I mean, that was 6 months ago. So
that's, yeah, so yeah. We'll kind of see how that goes. Talking with the players, they talked to Ollie, Nick Martin, Joe Maholsky, and Justin Kirkland. Ollie said, you know, he said some great things to say about AJ Green, says he's coming right away, asking questions, trying to, you know, fit in, be a leader, but make his own path as well. He talked about, you know, he echoed what Gundy said about some of these guys that know the system. They're going to be getting some mental reps on the sideline. He didn't seem super pumped about that during the spring, but I mean, I definitely get it. And then he said his goal for personal, they asked him for personal goals, and he wants to average 6.5 yards per carry. Last year, he was at 6.1. So we'll see if he can get up to that. That would be pretty impressive.
That's I don't know if I ever actually looked at Ollie's yards per carry last year. But like we were talking like 3.5 would be okay.
6. Yeah, that was 2 years ago. Yeah, they were averaged like 3.5 as a team.
Insane. Yeah. Wow.
So Nick Martin, he made a comment, Cade, about Kendall Daniels getting some work in Xavier Benson's spot. So that was a pretty interesting note because it's something you and I've talked about, maybe him moving to linebacker. We talked about it with Lunt. So that was a little interesting to hear him say that.
Yeah, put a gold star on that one because we literally have talked about that as a maybe for a while. And to hear it openly talked about is like kind of shocking. You wouldn't really expect that yet, but I like it.
And then he was asked about the NCAA game, and they all were. But I thought his answer was kind of what we were talking about. He goes, I don't know why you wouldn't opt in. It's dope. And that's what you and I were saying. Like, I definitely think NIL, you know, these guys should get their money for sure and try to, you know, get as much as they can. But when it comes to the NCAA game, man, I mean, you're going to be in the game. Take the $600.
And the guy, I mean, Arch Manning saying I'm focused on winning on the field it's got to be the dumbest, most try-hard thing I've ever heard. Get in the game. I love it.
Yeah. Also, shout out to our guy, Marshall Scott. Armstrong Nodum is how it is pronounced. I think we were saying Nodum or Nodim. It's Nodum. So he's been shouted out as a weight room freak by everybody. And him and Colin Clay, Maholsky said it, Ollie said it, Nick Martin said it, Justin Kirkland said it. So Colin Clay, a guy who's been in the program now for a while and been in college football for a while, and then Armstrong Nodum, who just got here, are your two weight room freaks.
We could see him. I mean, if they move to any type of four down routinely, like we could see him if he's that strong.
Yeah. Yeah, he's an absolute freak. But Nick Martin also said Coach Duffy challenged him to be a vocal leader last year. So Coach Duffy gets called out a lot for stuff like that. So it's pretty interesting. And then the last interesting note on Nick, he hurt his wrist in the third game of the season. He had a cast on it during this interview, and he played the entire season and got over 100 tackles with that.
That's why I didn't even know that. Didn't know he was hurt.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I didn't either, and he had a cast on it.
That's crazy that neither of us noticed that.
Yeah. Joe Maholsky, he had more snaps than any other Power 5 player and the third most of any FBS player.
Holy cow. Would not have thought that.
Yeah, I just thought that was kind of crazy. And he also is, you know, PFF shows him as like not allowing a sack. So it's pretty awesome. He also said the thing about Esai Glass starting. And then I loved his comment. They were asking him about getting a master's degree and all this stuff with it being, you know, he's been here multiple years. He says he's just taking random classes right now. So love that.
I love it. That's so good. I think at that point I would too. You'd catch me at golf and wine tasting. So.
And then to wrap it up, well, Justin Kirkland, his biggest comment that I saw, he said unprompted that he thinks this new four down front will free him up a little bit more. So take that.
That's like another gold star. We'll hand that one out for that comment as well.
Yeah. So Kirkland, you know, we talked about some of the things he said with Randolph being kind of in your face, but in a positive way. So a lot of good stuff, you know. There's still other things we need to hit. Big 12 Pro Day, Cowgirl softball with the big win over Texas, but we're running out of time this week. So, Cade, that's all I have. Recruiting stuff, that's all we have. And we'll be back at it next week with even more and probably an official hire of Steve Lutz, we hope.
Probably, we hope, and I agree, that would be great. And yeah, apologies for not being able to get to the other stuff. We've got, both of us have stuff to get to, but a lot to talk about with Steve Lutz and spring football. So a loaded episode nonetheless. Go Cowgirls, by the way. That was a massive win over Texas. Don't want to sugarcoat that or gloss over it, I should say. Go get a series win. That would be outstanding against the number two team in the country. Dustin, thank you as always. If you're not already, you can follow us at FeelsLike45Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Threads. You can follow Dustin at DustRagu, and you can follow me at Cade Webb. We will see you guys back here next week. Nuts for Lutz. Go Pokes.